This podcast is supported by Squarespace, the easiest way to create a beautiful, responsive website. For a free 14-day trial, visit squarespace.com. Hey, welcome to a brand new episode of Chips with Everything from The Guardian. I am Lee Alexander, and today, our show is about running. Not only running, it is actually an episode about perseverance, overcoming and defying odds, mind triumphing over body, about making the virtually impossible possible. It's about this guy.
I started running, it was around 2010, so yeah, not too long.
He's run from Boston to New York City. He's run nearly 100 kilometers through the Namibian desert. He's run on concrete, dirt, through rock fields, on sand.
You know, if you're going to achieve anything, you need to be willing to adapt. And it's your ability to adapt quickly that sort of determines if you're going to succeed. We used to joke that I only had one speed, and that was go. Because I just wouldn't stop. I'd just keep going until whatever it was achieved.
Oh, and there's one more thing about him that we should probably share with you.
My name is Simon Wheatcroft, and I'm known for being a blind runner.
Get set for an emotional one, because this story is just incredible. When Simon was 13, he was diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa. It's a degenerative eye condition, it's genetic, and essentially what it does is it deteriorates your retina over time. Simon went legally blind when he was 17. At this stage, you know, he's still able to go about his day-to-day life with a reasonable degree of ease. He could still see colors generally and could see figures and shapes in front of him. But into his 20s and early 30s, the condition began to get worse, and he lost practically all of his vision. Despite that, though, he was committed to living a completely normal life, and with the help of his guide dog, Ascot, and his friends and family around him, he was able to do just that. It wasn't until he thought up the idea of hiking up Half Dome, which is one of the tougher mountain climbs in Northern California, that his lack of vision actually stopped him from doing something that he loved.
I decided to try and climb Half Dome, which is a mountain in Yosemite, get to the top, and propose to my girlfriend. So I'd never climbed a mountain before. I didn't think it'd be too hard. I had lost my sight at this point. So we headed to this mountain, you know, we began to hike up, and it turns out it is actually quite hard to hike up that mountain. And I was beginning to slip and trip and stumble, and there's some really sheer drops as well, so if you fall off the edge, it's probably the end of the story. So the chance of dying seemed to be all too likely. So for the first time in my life, I had to make the really difficult decision to quit.
The reason that this had been so devastating for Simon wasn't because the climb had been too steep or the climb was too difficult. None of it had to do with the objective physical challenge itself that he had taken on. It was just simply that he couldn't see. And even though they didn't make it all the way to the top, Simon still proposed to his girlfriend, and they ended up getting married a few weeks later in Las Vegas. When he came back to England a couple months down the road, though, he just couldn't shake the fact that his blindness had gotten in the way of him and a goal. And he was determined to never let that happen again.
You know, I'd quit because I couldn't see. And I'd tell myself that I'd never quit again because I couldn't see. And I was in the midst of a bit of a change of career. So I was heading to university. So I was waiting for university to start. Typical student, I was broke. So I couldn't afford a treadmill or a gym membership or anything like that. But I did own a pair of shoes. So then I thought to myself, how hard can it be to go outside and learn to run alone?
Running was going to be Simon's new challenge. He would conquer it or die trying. It was that important to him.
Yeah, the way I began running alone was, at that point in time, I lived very near some football fields. So I just had to leave my house, go around the corner, and I was on the football fields. So then, when I first began, I used to position myself between the goalposts and just run up and down a football pitch.
For a person who'd lost his vision, this seemed like a fantastic place to learn to run alone. You know, very little at stake. It's just a big field, a couple goalposts, and Simon. That is, until the dog walkers began to come out, and they became a bit of a problem. They assumed Simon could see, and Simon, of course, assumed that they would move, so evidently it was time for a change.
It was time to head somewhere new, so that's when, again, I was very fortunate to live near an airport. There was no way cars could get down there. You know, dog walkers weren't going to go down there, and there was no real reason for pedestrians to be there. So it was essentially a piece of tarmac that no one used. So I used to head to this closed road, and I would run the WL lines because I'd feel them underfoot, and I'd just run up and down, a straight piece of road.
And then only a short while later, Simon was prepared to go to the next step and run the open road. Dual carriageway, live traffic, you know, the whole package. He would use the raised painted lines on the road to keep him on track and out of traffic's way. And just like that, just a few short months since he had taken his first paces on that football pitch, Simon was on the road, running and quitting for nothing.
So after a while of that closed road, my wife dropped me off one day. I built some confidence, running up and down. I stepped out onto the dual carriageway, told myself that cars move, and just ran down the dual carriageway. Emotionally, you know, you have to exist in this very strange state where you believe anything's possible and that you're quite invincible, you know, to dare to step out onto that road for the first time. And it did take a while to build my confidence. But obviously, you know, that fake reality can only exist for a small amount of time before you realise that you're not invincible. And I think I only probably got that day, that piece of road is around 0.2 miles. And I sort of got 0.2 miles down that road and then just burst into tears. Because just emotionally, it really hit me what I was doing, and it all became far too overwhelming. So I just stood there and I cried for a while. And then I realised that I had to head back before my wife found out I was out the open road. So I quickly ran back before she found me.
That incredible, rather beautiful moment was the start of something massive for Simon. He became hooked. He trained hard, and he became stronger and more resilient and just an overall better runner.
At that point in time, I was willing to push to some incredible physical and mental extremes. You know, even running into lampposts and traffic lights and trees, I just shake it off and carry on. That wouldn't be a reason to stop.
Running into lampposts aside, there are only two times that Simon says he's ever quit a run. One time, the bladder that holds the water that he carries around his waist broke. No water equals no energy, so he stopped that day. Instead of a bladder, he began bringing along a bag full of water bottles. And he'd hide this bag along the side of the road, and every time he'd pass by it, he'd take a drink. The other time he quit, he went to take a drink and actually found someone had stolen the bag of water. So that's it. He stopped running twice, and both times were completely out of his control. This is how absolutely committed Simon was.
And they were the only two times I really gave up. You know, I was willing to push it to actual collapse. You know, sometimes I would collapse and have to call my wife and say, you have to come get me. I'm collapsed on the road down near the nursery, and she'd have to come find me. Or sometimes I'd collapse at home, but I'd still get up the next day and go again. So it was very difficult around that time to give up, because I just seemed to have this big drive. Once I'd mastered running alone, the small challenges didn't seem a good enough reason to stop.
It was at this time Simon knew he was ready to take his love for running to the next level, competition. He got in touch with IBM, and alongside the tech company, they designed an iPhone app that would allow him to run by himself in marathons and other competitions. The app just kind of guides Simon along a pre-programmed route.
What would happen is it kind of works like parking sensors. So if I deviated from the bearing, it would beep and the frequency would increase, you know, the further away I was from the desired bearing. And it was a really low tone for left and a high tone for too far right. So it was incredibly simple. That's what it needed to be to work in this particular environment.
And with this amazing new technology at his disposal, Simon was ready to take on the biggest challenge of his life, a 250-kilometer ultra-marathon through the Namibian desert. That when we come back.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. Whether the story behind your passion is out of the ordinary or simply out of this world, you should tell it in an unforgettable way. Squarespace helps you do just that, with the only websites designed to showcase what makes your passion worth pursuing. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com/guardian.
Squarespace.
Hello. If you're enjoying the podcast that you're listening to now, can I recommend another brilliant podcast from The Guardian? It's called Politics Weekly. It's a weekly political analysis show from The Guardian and The Observer's top journalists and commentators. They talk about all the issues that matter, all the things we pretend we understand. The housing crisis, the US presidential election. It is a great listen. You can find Politics Weekly on theguardian.com, on iTunes, or your podcasting app of choice.
The race was in Namibia, and it was a 7-day ultra marathon in the desert, 250k. So you head out there and, you know, you just got to survive in the desert for 7 days, as well as every day run a marathon for 4 days, and then on the fifth day do 50 and rest, and then do 6 on the final day.
Hey, welcome back. You're with Lee Alexander, and that is what Simon, this incredibly determined blind runner, was ready to face, a 250-kilometer race through the sweltering deserts of Namibia. With the help of his new navigational iPhone app, he got through the first 3 days relatively easily. He got, you know, a few scratches and bruises here and there, but nothing that, in his mind, was going to stop him from completing the ultramarathon. Based on the route that he and the IBM team had programmed into the app, the terrain was pretty straightforward, or so they thought.
And the idea was the desert is desolate. There's not much out there. But it turns out that wasn't as true as I quite hoped it to be. And what really sort of broke me mentally and physically was on day three, I arrived into the penultimate checkpoint, so I sat down, had a drink, had a pie to eat, and said, Simon, you know, the next 3.5 miles is a rock field. I was like, what? I thought, I didn't realise there was rock fields until the final day. They're like, no, there's a rock field. So this rock field consisted of rocks ranging from the size of your fist to a loaf of bread, and scattered like hundreds of thousands on a cake. It was just dense, dense rock.
So he gets to the start of this rock field and he has to make a decision. You know, do I stop before I even attempt this? Do I push on and see what happens? And I think given Simon's personality and what we know about him, we can guess what he did.
So then we stepped into this rock field and there's nothing you can do. You know, you don't know what the next step's going to hold. You know, you're probably going to take some damage on a rock, which is very difficult to deal with. And, you know, I was slipping and sliding on the rocks. At this point, you know, you're reasonably blistered, so all you're doing now is you're taking the skin off your feet. So every step, you know, is relatively painful. And it also means, because I can't see where I'm placed my feet, you're taking a lot of lateral damage.
Eventually, he makes it through the rock field, and he's not really in great shape on the other end of it. He reaches the checkpoint for the day, eats some food, has a drink, then he heads straight to bed, hoping that he's going to be energized and ready to go in the morning. Unfortunately, though, that just wasn't the case.
You know, I'm just worn out from the previous day. It's really messing with my head a little bit, and you start to question, oh, how much further can I push? You know, I've proven this is possible. I've just run 3 marathons alone. I know it can be done. How much more can I prove out here? And at this point again, you know, physically everything's starting to fall apart again. My blood pressure's tanking. I do have light perception, but at this point my vision's really starting to black out and I'm getting dizzy spells. I'm losing feeling in my extremities again. So then, you know, I'm still a distance from the checkpoint and I'm thinking, is it worth pushing? You know, do I class this as the finish? I came out here to prove something and I've proven that. So I made the very difficult decision to stop. And I still don't know whether that's getting chalked up as failure or quitting.
Sitting down with Simon and listening to him talk about this experience and seeing the expression on his face, it's just obvious how tough this type of loss was for him. This ultramarathon through Namibia represented so much, it just was a huge deal for him. He completed 90 kilometers, but needed to finish the entire 250. And that's why he's not finished with Namibia just yet.
I'm going by next year to put it to bed. I'm going to finish. I'm changing the way I train. I'm moving from the relative safety of that constant service to now being willing to take on training on a surface that I don't know what the next step's going to hold. And I'm going to train like that for 11 months so I can go back and I can get through that rock field and hopefully deal with it.
We asked Simon what advice he'd give to someone who wants to accomplish something monumental in the face of a distinct challenge.
I think just don't give up. You know, no matter the challenge or the obstacle, it can always be overcome. You just, like I say, you need to adapt. You need to think perhaps of a unique way to solve that problem. And often, you know, it really is darkest before the dawn. You know, while I've been able to achieve some fantastic things thanks to technology, there's been an ebb and a flow. You know, there's been peaks and troughs, and often, you know, you've come to ask me about a peak. You know, we use technology to do something incredible, but there's a lot of hard times, you know, in between that, and that's often not discussed. So I'd perhaps say that, yeah, you know, it's going to be tough sometimes, but there's always another peak around the corner.
And finally, he told us an amazing story of his return to running after Namibia. He ran all the way from Boston to New York City.
We sort of arrive into Manhattan, and the idea was to finish in Central Park, because New York Marathon finishes in Central Park, so we finished at the actual marathon finish line. And it was a particularly special moment for me because I began training with all the running the week my eldest son was born, Grayson. So we thought, wouldn't it be nice if Grayson came out and ran the last 2 miles into Central Park with me? So 2 miles out, after being in quite a lot of pain from running that much concrete, and you know, even on concrete you still take a lot of knocks. I can't see the curbs and little lips and things like that, so I'm in a lot of pain. And then Grayson's there, and we run sort of the last 2 miles together through parallel to Central Park actually, and then we cut down into Columbus Circle, and then, you know, eventually you get to Central Park. And you know, at this point, people had been getting involved in the story, so everyone sort of, well, not everyone, but a lot of people knew what I was doing and, you know, how far I'd run to get to this point. And then something like 800 metres out, the entire crowd starts chanting my name, and then they all run into the finish line with me and cross that line. And it was a beautiful adventure. I think it still remains one of the best things I've ever done.
That is all from us this week. You can let us know what you thought of this episode by tweeting us at Guardian Audio. I'm Lee Alexander, and you can follow me at Lee Alexander. This episode of Chips with Everything was produced and mixed by Matt Shore. He's on Twitter at MattShre. If you have a weird or interesting story about how technology has worked its way into your life, you should email him. Just send a note to podcast@theguardian.com with the subject Chips, and he'll be in touch. You can subscribe to the podcast and to all of The Guardian's other great shows on iTunes or on your favorite podcasting app. Oh, and please don't forget to give our show a quick rating and review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it, and it also helps people who haven't heard about our show yet find out. Thank you again so much for listening. Can't wait to catch you next week.
The Guardian has always been a community of readers, journalists, and contributors. And now our live events are bringing these people together.
The Guardian events are The Guardian at its best, which is a two-way conversation involving the reader and having a real, genuine, thriving debate.
Could be anything from food and culture, arts, to politics, to foreign affairs.
To see what events are coming up and to check out the benefits of membership, go to members.theguardian.com. Also, subscribe to the Guardian Live podcast. You can do so on iTunes, SoundCloud, and other reputable audio platforms.
For more great downloads, go to theguardian.com/audio.